Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
It is time for the good, the bad, and the dumb. Good Friday to you. We're getting into this weekend. Like we just mentioned, all of the sports that you can watch, from NASCAR to college basketball to golf to Pro Bowl to NHL All-Star Game, NBA. But they may not be the good of the day. What's the good of the day?
Good of the day. Well, you know, it's Friday.
Friday.
Right. I got two.
Two goods for you guys. Let's go at it. All right.
All right, the first good of the day. I got to give it up to my man Ravens tight end Mark Andrews.
Mark Andrews, okay.
Yeah, he's just out there. You know, I mean, he's a, we would say, an all-pro tight end.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
he was missed this season, even though the Ravens were good. He was missed.
Instrumental in the Ravens being the number one overall team in the AFC. He's also a hero, Tony.
Because?
On a flight from Baltimore to Phoenix, he is, according to some eyewitnesses, he is credited with helping save a woman's life.
Oh, give me the details on this.
So, like I said, the flight was from Baltimore to Phoenix. A woman went into some serious medical distress. A doctor and nurse who were on the flight, you know, not together, separate, came over and they said they couldn't really find a pulse. Blood pressure was really, really low. She was having trouble breathing. Her oxygen levels were really, really low. And that's when Mark Andrews stepped up and said, "Hey, do you think it's low blood sugar? Why don't we test it? I have my diabetes test kit," because Mark Andrews is diabetic.
Okay.
Man, I didn't know this about him, but so he was there and he showed the doctor nurse how to utilize or use his diabetes test kit. I don't know if it's different or whatnot, but was right there. And all three of them were able to figure out a way to stabilize the woman until they got to Phoenix and where paramedics took over.
This story in a nutshell is basically incredible.
Yeah.
This is incredible because it basically in a nutshell is a woman was in dire need of medical attention. Two medical professionals were on the flight with her. Neither one of them knew what happened. It was happening. And an NFL tight end came in and gave them medical advice to save this woman's life.
Yep.
That's an awesome story. That's a great story.
But did you know this about Mark Andrews, that he will test his glucose levels about 20 times during a game?
20 times during a game.
Yeah.
Wow.
He always checks right before. Then he'll check periodically throughout the game. He always checks, a couple times at halftime because he always wants to make sure that his blood level's okay.
How long does that take?
Or blood sugar level.
Like, does he have a monitoring device? Because I've seen those on TV.
He wears that outside of the games. And that's why I think he checks it as
often during the game. So when he's checking, is he pricking himself?
I think so.
Yeah. Wow.
He just sits there, sits on the bench, bleep, does that little pinprick thing and just sits there and waits for a second, goes, "All right, I'm good."
Wow, that's great.
You know, if his blood sugar levels get too low, does he? I remember, I don't know, I still don't know if this is the proper way, but I remember in elementary school, there was a girl who was diabetic, and I remember being somewhat jealous because in class, in the mid-morning, she always got to have a fruit roll-up.
Because she needed a little spice.
She needed a little sugar, and I was always jealous. I was like,
Why does she get to eat a fruit roll up? Yeah, exactly.
I would like a fruit roll up.
Yeah.
But she has diabetes. I don't know what that is.
So
I just want a fruit roll up.
That is amazing. Like a doctor was on the flight and was like, "I have no idea." And then Mark Andrews goes, "Low blood sugar," and the doctor goes,
"No, that fits.
I guess, sure. Of my medical training, all of my schooling, I didn't even think about that. Thank you, NFL tight end Mark Andrews.
What's your name? Doctor?
Exactly.
You're a doctor too?
Dr. Andrews. I appreciate that. And you gotta throw your ego out the window in that situation, don't you? The woman is the number one thing, right?
Yeah.
So you gotta be like, "No. I had 8 years of medical school."
That's why when you see it on TV, doesn't it bother you? When you a doctor, anybody refusing medical assistance.
Yeah.
Because, they're too proud or too above it all. And it's like, okay, the number one thing is, the person that you're attending to, not
you. Save the life of the person.
Yeah.
It's not your glory. That's great. That's a great story. Is he? Yeah. Are they giving him an award?
I hope so.
I hope they do.
I hope so. Maybe make him an honorary doctor.
Oh my goodness, that is not on my bucket list. Being on a flight in a medical emergency.
Yeah.
That's not what I want.
No, that's
no. Now, I did tell you the story of we went on a cruise last summer and somebody died on the cruise, right?
No. Well,
I think I told you that story. Like the first night we were there, my wife and I had dinner. My wife and I were in the elevator to go to the upper deck to walk on the upper deck. And while we were in the elevator, a guy saw I was wearing a Florida Gator shirt. And he goes, "Hey, Florida, we're going back to Florida." And I thought he was kidding. Like, "Oh, yeah, we're turning the boat around." Yeah. And he goes, "No, seriously, we're turning the boat around. We're heading back to Florida. There's a death on the boat." And we're like, "Oh, no, no." He said it was an emergency. So it was a medical emergency. And I was like, "No, not turning the boat around." So we went up to the top and we looked and we saw land and we saw the lights of the mainland. And we were like, "We're heading right over there. What's happening?" And when we went back to our room, we looked at the navigational port. We were heading right back to Florida. And then the next day word kind of came around that a person had died. And so the captain of the ship turned around after they dropped him off. They flew him out. They got to a point where the helicopters could get him. And then he turned and he says the next day, he says, "We had a medical emergency on the ship. We increased our cruising speed to get us to Aruba on time." And all I remember the whole rest of the way to Aruba was we were flying on a cruise ship. Like you'd be up on the upper deck going, "We are going fast." Like we are, like the wind was a little bit stiffer. Like this is, then you get down to the bottom where the speed of the boat, you can really sense it based on the, you're like, "Holy mackerel, how fast are we going on this massive ship?" Right?
Can it go faster?
I was like, how quickly are we flying through this thing?
Are we going to start taking waves?
Yeah.
You know, like when you get on a speedboat, it's like all of a sudden you're like hopping a little bit. Is that now, a cruise ship hop?
Yeah. All right, exactly. Now, I bring that up because like on the cruise ship, you're like, "Hey, you know what? We had an emergency. We turned around." On a flight, you're like, are we landing on some strip in Iowa to get our medical attention? Are we landing this puppy on a highway? Like, what are we doing?
Wasn't that some of the belief behind Carrie Fisher?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She passed away on a flight. But it was like one of those situations that, well, if this had happened to her at home, she might still be alive.
Because you can't just, there's no hospital on the plane, like medical area.
Yeah.
You got to find a way to land that thing.
And even if you do land, I mean, it's up to the captain. Like, all right, you know, it's going to take me like 15, 20 minutes to land.
Yeah.
In that 15 to 20 minutes time, is that enough?
That's right. Yeah.
Or, you know, by the time we get down, they're going to go, "Oh, no, don't worry. You guys could have kept going. She was dead on arrival."
I didn't know Mark Andrews was diabetic. So that's actually a good part of that story. That's good for him, man. All right. We'll touch on the bad because we're going to be going.
Well,
but
I had a second good.
Oh, second good is even better. Okay, great.
Yeah. I mean, we can do it real quick.
Yeah.
The head coach of the Titans, you've heard of him, Brian Callahan.
Brian Callahan, yeah.
I thought this was a cool story. Brian Callahan and the Titans are working with the Cleveland Browns to bring over their offensive line coach to become the Titans' offensive line coach.
Yep.
The reason why? Because it's his father, Bill.
That's a great story.
And not only that, but it will make Mark NFL history because in no time throughout the NFL's history has a son hired his father to be a coach.
Yeah. Now, it happened in college with Lane Kiffin hiring Monty Kiffin at USC, but not in the NFL. You're right. How does that work? How does that dynamic work?
They got
Dad, get out of my office. Yeah. Dad, I don't even want to see you right now. Get out. Get out. I will call you in when I'm ready to talk to you. We gave up five sacks on Sunday.
Tonight.
Dad, you got some splaining to do on Monday when we get back to that office. Figure it out. Our quarterback got sacked. Will Levis went down five times. You better have a game plan. I swear to God, Pop. I swear to God.
You better have a new game plan. Or a letter of resignation. One of those two needs to be on my desk in the morning.
Monday morning. Either resign or a better game plan. Because this stuff ain't lasting, Dad. Oh, no, no, no. And don't you use that "I took a second job to support you in college" crap. I don't want to hear it. Heard that my whole life. No. Go back to the drawing board. How great is that?
Yeah, I just thought, but I thought it was really, really cool. I thought it was a
that is great.
And the other part of that too is that the Browns are like, yeah, we get it.
That's the best part of the story is that the Browns could see the big, big, big picture on this, right? As they said, look,
Bill Callahan actually is a good offensive line coach.
He's a good offensive line coach, and he's a smart, smart coach. He's a coach of the Raiders, Nebraska, smart coach.
I think the Browns had like the third best offensive line in the country this year or in the NFL. So, and for them to give that up is not. Yeah, I mean that'd end up being a huge hole for them.
That's
right,
and that's great. I mean, he basically is like, "Can I go work with my son?" And they're like, "We love what you're doing here, but yeah, we get it.
Yeah, we get it.
It's a once in a lifetime
opportunity.
Good for the Browns. Good for the Browns and the Callahans in Nashville. How great is that? Good. That's a great story. Great story. We'll get the bad and the dumb coming up next on the Friday edition of Wake Up Call, sending into the weekend before Super Bowl week in Las Vegas.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, we got a spring music because Punxsutawney Phil did not see his shadow. I mean, spring's coming early, kids, on Groundhog Day. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb continuing. It did two goods. Now it's time for the bad of the day.
The bad of the day. You know what? And Sacramento Kings actually have, a legitimate gripe here.
Okay.
But I think the problem with the Sacramento Kings is that they fail to realize that the NBA All-Star Game is more about a popularity contest than it is based on actual talent.
Yeah, it really is.
But the Kings, who are the fifth-ranked team in the Western Conference, went 0-for for any All-Star selection.
Oh.
So, De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, I was going to say De'Aaron Fox didn't make it.
You're a good player. You're one of the bright young stars in this game. You don't get to go to the All-Star show.
That's too bad.
So, yeah.
Well, not everybody can go to the All-Star game.
No. It's the usual suspects, though. It's the names that you'd be familiar with that are going. No surprise on any of the selections.
They're going back to that East-West format.
Yeah, which that's good.
That's good. The game's going to be in Indianapolis, and so they're going back to that, which I thought was great. The picking teams thing, it was fun for drama to watch facial expressions and like whatever. But
to watch
little,
James Harden get disappointed every year.
Right, exactly, right. But it was a little too much. I
think
like,
they got rid of it knowing that, he's not going to be selected at all this year.
I think the players went, you know what, nobody wants to be picked last or second to last.
Oh, it's, come on, you know, the ego?
The ego of this, like, we're all got big egos. Nobody likes this. They're left. Who wants to be the last All-Star picked at the All-Star game? So just keep it West Conference.
De'Aaron Fox wouldn't mind, I guess.
I guess he would love it. But I did see video this morning of Jalen Brunson, like, practically crying when it was, you know, and he scored 40 points last night. The Knicks beat Indiana, and he got a nod.
The crowd chanting MVP for him.
The crowd went crazy for him last night, and he was practically in tears. And some have said, you know, the Knicks fans don't usually stick around for post-game interviews. They all did because Jalen Brunson was at 40 and an all-star nod, and they loved it. So good for him. But, yeah, I'm glad it's going back. I used to like the NBA All-Star game. I don't like the NFL Pro Bowl. Major League Baseball All-Star Game is my favorite, but I used to like the NBA All-Star Game.
I used to like the Pro Bowl back in like the 80s.
I liked it when it was in Hawaii and it was like a real football game.
And I liked it because it was always fun. I mean, they always had the same color jersey, but all the different helmets. And it was the only time like on an offensive line and defensive line would match up. And you're like, look at all those helmets.
That's pretty awesome. What a
good
look.
That was pretty awesome. But, you know, and then I guess in a way, Sean Taylor ruined it for everyone.
Probably. Yeah,
you know, he delivered the last real hit.
The last real hit that should have happened. It's like, you know, it's like, but the NBA All-Star Game, it was always no defense. But the scores now are like 210.
It's
silly.
Yeah,
like there's like nobody wants you to play rough Detroit Pistons late 80s defense.
And
they don't want you to. You can't score every time you have the basketball.
And did they officially get rid of the 3-point contest, or is this the little side action thing?
You know what? The one that Curry's doing with Sabrina Ionescu? Yeah. Is there an actual 3-point contest like it was in the day? I think they got rid of that.
Because that, I mean, that was always fun. Especially even now, it was fun.
I know.
I mean, it became so much better than the slam dunk contest because the slam dunk contest to me got boring.
The slam, like, there's only so much you can do with the slam dunk contest, but yeah.
Until you start bringing out props and animals and things like that.
Yeah, but I used to be a fan of the NBA All-Star Game, and now it's like it's hard to watch.
It really is.
It's like this is not basketball.
No, it's I mean, Harlem Globetrotters against the Washington Generals ends up being more competitive.
I know. It's like it's every time. Well, we can't defend it all. They have to get to the basket, get to the rim unguarded. That's just the way we are now.
What they should do is bring in the remember when MTV for a while was doing that celebrity basketball?
Oh, the rock and jock game and stuff like that? Yeah.
But one of the things I've always wanted to see, and I would love to see the NBA try this, you know, just have to go out there and say, hey, these rules don't count. I mean, they had a 5-point spot.
Oh, right.
You know, that was around mid-court. But the other one I would love to see was the basket that I think was like 20, 25 feet up in the air. It was suspended hanging down. And you could take a 25-point shot by hitting this or something like that, hitting this basket that was way, way up in the rafters.
That's great.
I would like to see NBA players try that because now it's just, alley-oop. Didn't see that coming.
Before we get to the dumb, I made this. My wife and I were watching Wednesday night the Kentucky-Florida game, and I was telling her, I was like, I said, I don't mean to bore you with this statement, but whenever I watch basketball and I'm reminded of Naismith putting the basket 10 feet high. And it is amazing that people, it's almost like a perfect height. Like if it was 9 feet instead of 10 feet, the scores would be way different in a game than it was. If it was 11 feet instead of 10 feet, scores would be way different. It's almost like perfect. It's like you can be just good, but still miss easy shots. Tall guys will still miss those easy shots with a 10-foot rim. It's like baseball. If baseball was 91 feet, think about how different the game would be. Mm-hmm. If it was 89 feet, think about how different the game would be. Or it's almost like magically perfect.
Pitching. Yeah. The pitching mound being 60 feet, 6 inches. I mean, if it was 55 feet or you know, 80 feet, you know, the difference between the two is ridiculous.
Now, granted, if we were accustomed to those things, we wouldn't notice it, but, you know, we would just accept what it is. But I'm glad it's where it is. It's still, like, I watched a guy in the Florida game. He had a 18-foot jump shot wide open, completely missed it. I'm like, he's probably made that more times than he's missed, but this game will do it to you. Just bounced off the rim weird and bounced off. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day. I know you've seen this story, so let's. I think we can dive into it a little bit more. Maybe you haven't, then you're going to enjoy the story. And I'm talking about DeSanto Rollins.
Okay.
Or DeSanto Rollins, I'm not sure. He is a former Ole Miss player who is currently trying to sue Lane Kiffin.
Oh, that's right. I remember this story.
Over mental health issues. Yep. The judge dismissed the case, but he refuses to back down until he gets what is rightfully owed to him.
Yeah, he's really claiming that Lane said some
horrible
things to him and told him he wasn't on the team or whatever.
Here's my issues that I have with him, right? I mean, first of all, he's seeking $10 million in damages. Right? There's always the money amount. That I don't even care about anymore. That just goes in one ear and out the other. I don't even understand where you come up with these numbers anymore, but you just do. Yeah. So he's asking for $10 million in damages. But it's the other part that I'm having issues with and why I put it in the dumb. He is wanting to, what was it? He is also suing for his return to the team.
He wants to be on the team with Lane Kiffin as head coach?
Yes. And he wants to have the right to choose the position of his liking.
Okay, now that's in La La Land. That's crazy town.
Right? I mean, that proves his case that maybe there's mental health issues going on. I don't think I've ever seen where, you know, it's like I was trying to equate it this way. If you were to get fired, or if you were to get not fired, I guess, because you could try to get back your position because you felt you were wrongfully terminated. But if you quit.
Yeah.
Right. Or if you were let go and you claimed all these hardships that you had under said boss. But then you were like, yeah, but you know what, judge, you know what I want more? I want my position back.
Right, exactly.
I want my spot. I want to get my parking spot again. I want my key card back.
Wasn't the point of this lawsuit that Kiffin degraded him and yelled at him and called him names and stuff like that?
But I don't know if it was, I don't know if he was like singled out.
Yeah. Okay.
Like
okay.
I think it's one of those where it's a coach yelling at players.
Right. Right. Right.
And I don't want to use a bad term for him, but I guess he was overly sensitive towards it.
Right. Right. Exactly. Because like if you work for like a big company that's got a real HR department and you're fired, like they're firing you because you screwed up, they don't yell at you. They just go, "This is where we part company. Thanks. Bye." Like, they don't get into that. Like, they don't scream and yell and holler. But in a coaching player environment, you get that. Like, you get that sort of treatment. A coach, it's almost sort of universally accepted that a coach will say, "Why are you running like a dog?" You know, or things like that. They'll call you some names. They'll put you, like, there's almost like an acceptable way of yelling at a player and talking to a player to get the best out of that player, right? That's like a tactic. But what he was saying was, I get that. What he did was unacceptable. He was telling me things like, I'll throw you, I'll kick you off the team and you won't play anywhere ever," like things like that.
Yeah,
like,
I guess.
Like little threats like that. That's what kind of I thought the story was going
to be. The crux of it, too, is that, you know, he missed practices and stuff like that because he was going through a mental health crisis, and he blames Kiffin for not addressing or acknowledging that he was going through a mental health crisis.
That's right. I remember, and kind of belittling the mental health crisis. Yeah.
Or not giving it its credence.
See, he had me a little bit until he decided he wanted to run the team. Then at that point,
he wants to come back.
He wants to come back and actually be the coach of his position, whatever position he wants.